You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardner, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical. When I came out here, I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced that I have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Like, landed on the ground, I kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out of the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and he was talking to Moxon and Joe. Where the party gonna hell? Out in the St. John's swamps. Sasquatch doing his brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Viscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Viscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Marco Bill. And Tom is, he had to go to meetings all day today. He's in a meeting right now. Otherwise, he'd like to be on the show. Last week, we had a significant... Well, tried to tell you everything about the Patterson-Gimlin film and what was wrong with it in the hoax of the century. And I'm not sure if everybody caught on, but, you know, Philip Morris was one of our guests on there. And a lot of people don't know this. I mean, he just sounds like a little old guy. And he is he's the largest costume, maker or developer, whatever you want to call it, in the world. His catalog is worldwide. He's a billionaire. And but he's a good friend of ours. He's, you know, since about 4 or 5 years ago when we first had him on the show, when we did the 40th anniversary show, Philip came on. A lot of people don't realize that. And he's a really super guy. He's trying to help us in any way he can. I just want everybody to know that he's a really good guy. I mean, he just sounds like he's a little old guy, but that guy he probably owns more stuff. He's got a million square foot of of space in his warehouses in North Carolina, I think it is. But anyway, I'd like to, all of our listeners in our Bigfoot family out there, take a couple of seconds here just to acknowledge all of you out there. I've gotten dozens of emails, some Facebook entries, and guest book entries and things like that, and I have to apologize. I haven't been able to answer all of them, but I want to tell you that we appreciate every single thing that you guys, when you try to contact us and let us know things, keep us up to speed with things, and or just listen to the radio show. We appreciate that. You people out there are what make us what we are, and we do appreciate it, and we love everybody for that. We've got a bunch of people out there that are sick. I can't name everybody, but sick and distressed. Chuck Creel's father, I think he's pretty much terminal, and I'm not sure how long he's got, but Chuck is trying to deal with that with his family. There's several other people out there that have taken ill, and we just wish you all the very best. We send our prayers and good wishes out to everybody, and hope that everybody is will either get well or at least make it through the best way they can. Tonight, I thought what we would do is, besides we got some really good, of course, we got Dave Ortiz and Brenda from Four Corners. They're going to tell us about some recent activities going on in their place there. I brought Leroy back on. And we've had Leroy on there a couple times now. We've only spent about 10 minutes or 5 minutes. I got a lot of emails last week and the week before trying to figure out what's going on with the Patterson-Gimlin investigation. And it's that, you know, some people say, well, I thought there was only one film. I thought there was two films. And there's four films. But there's a bunch of things about this that when we talk about it, and even me, without going back and taking a look at things and kind of rehashing things, I forget things. And what I thought I would do tonight is on www.bigfootlive.com, that's www.bigfootlive.com, right under Leroy Blevins' listing, there's a link, and it has a web page. And in there are all of the photos, all of the films, everything about what we're going to talk about tonight with Leroy. And it's kind of he's going to go through it in a sequential manner to try to explain everything, because people are trying to figure out, well, what's the tracking dog film? Well, what does that have to do with this? How come these people aren't in the other film? I've seen this film. Well, very few people have seen. There's a couple films out there that everybody's seen, but very few people have seen some of the films that Leroy has been able to use in his investigation. And those are the things that are significant in determining the hoax. And he's done that in an extremely efficient manner. Really, really spent a lot of time on this. He's done a great job in doing it. I've went through it a dozen times with him. But anyway, we're going to go through that in a sequential kind of a manner tonight and spend about 20 minutes on it so that everybody can get an idea of how and where and when and who was involved and how they got involved and all of the contracts, all of the papers. These all lend themselves to determining that this is a hoax. Okay? And so here we go. We're going to start out. Dave Ortiz is our first guest tonight. And Dave has been had several things happen here in the last 3 weeks or so. Dave, how are you tonight, my friend? Hello, Dave. Dave?
Oh, here? Hello?
Yeah, Dave.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you good.
Okay, great.
How are you tonight?
Oh, good. I didn't expect to get in so soon. I was feeding my cat. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm doing great, Marco Bill.
Well, why don't you give us a lowdown on what some of the things, what I'd like you to, if you don't mind, some of the things that's happening around there. I think Leslie, your friend, you could kind of rehash her story. I'm going to have her on, I think, next week.
Okay, great.
Because she couldn't make it tonight, but you could kind of go over her story and her experience and stuff if you'd like.
Yeah, in north central Arizona, on the Mogollon Rim, she lives very close to it. She's been having she went out on a camp out. She's an outdoor adventure woman, is what she is. And she loves the outdoors. She goes fishing, hunting, and enjoys the beautiful mountains of northern Arizona. Well, she went camping one weekend, and she started experiencing some very strange things. They were having rocks thrown at them, sticks, red eyes. They actually saw some red eyes glowing up on top of a ridge, staring right at them. And just really, you know, just basically just some Bigfoot Bigfoot encounter. Well, they the next morning, she actually left. You know, I just heard the story once, read it actually, and it scared her and her friend, and I think she had her son with her too. It scared them enough to get out of there and just leave everything as is. So then they came back the next day. Everything seemed to be untouched, but they did survey the area. And on top of the ridge, they found quite a few footprints, very big footprints. She didn't have a measuring tape, but she did put, like, her foot next to it. You could see the size of these things. You know, they're just big. There was also some, like, wood structures. Looked like something was trying to make a little fort or something to hide its either its eyes or its body during the night. And then she wrote a story about it. She's a very good a journalist and great photographer, and she showed pictures and gave a very, very good description. But she's just one of the many people that have been experiencing things that are out of the ordinary in the Mogollon Rim region of Arizona.
Now, you've had some other things, too, go on. Can you talk about some of those?
Oh, sure, yeah. Something very recent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually going to go out and do a little investigation tomorrow morning out on the Navajo Reservation. Near Shiprock, New Mexico, there was a person that was jogging, and as they were jogging, it must be across a river, because there was a guardrail. Either a river or just an area where there's a curve or something. There's a guardrail, and a Bigfoot popped up right there. I think it was in the late evening. It scared this person tremendously. They saw the face. It was just right there, It's a pretty it's so compelling. I'm going to go out there in the morning and interview this person. But this was a very chilling. This person had heard about Bigfoot in the area, but never thought they'd ever see one. Actually, much less stand up in front of them and just stare them down. Needless to say, I don't think the man is going to go jogging in that area again.
Now, have you heard anything from Marcus?
No, I haven't lately. He's been pretty sick lately. I've seen his Facebook a few times, and he hasn't mentioned anything weird out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
We should investigate that area again, though, right not too far from his house. And be it, this is not a totally rural area. It's an unincorporated village or town where he had a sighting. But we've been getting so much activity right by the river in the general area of the Four Corners, San Juan River, that we've been pretty much looking into that area quite a bit. And this year has been a deep increase in stuff. I talked to Brenda Harris, and she even tells me, because she lives right in the middle of it, that a lot of things have been happening. They've been hearing lots of noises and just things increasing definitely. There is a drought presently in the area, and we're wondering if maybe because there's less food out there, maybe they're getting more aggressive or just getting closer into civilization to maybe look for food. There's plenty of water in the river, but the food may be scarce, so they are appearing to get closer in toward houses. I did hear some wood knocks here at the house here. The San Juan River is actually about three-quarters of a mile away, and I did hear wood knocks about 4 in the morning about 3 weeks ago, and a weird gurgling yell, and that was it. And it was a very quiet night, because normally we've been having crickets out. It was extremely quiet. I just stuck my head out the bedroom window and was like, well, nothing else, but it was very quiet. So I said, yeah, we probably got a squatch or something similar out there.
My gosh. Yeah. Well, there's a lot going on then in your area.
It appears to be, yes. And this year seems to be just a lot more active. I think even up in the mountains, the food sources aren't quite as good this year either. So I think definitely these Bigfoot are staying closer to the river bottoms, maybe even doing some fishing in the water.
Are there caves around there?
Yes, there are. There are some cliffs actually all over the place. Around the San Juan River, too, there's actual places where the cliffs might be about 50 to 80 foot tall, maybe up to 100. And there are caves within those cliffs scattered all around the valley and even below Shiprock and probably all the way to Lake Powell.
Wow. Well, that's prime territory, I guess.
It seems to be, and you know, it's just surprising because we have so much territory. The mountains are beautiful up there right now with the green grass, the aspen, and I'm sure they're up there too. But it's kind of surprising that they'd be down here in the high desert. We would think they'd want to be in a cooler area that's, you know, like 60s and 70s,
right?
Daytime highs. And actually, I went to Mesa Verde National Park yesterday. And they're having lows there, like in the upper 30s still. And here it is in the middle of June.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And when I left there, it was already like almost just barely 50 degrees near the Park Point. And I was like, wow, this is pretty soberingly cool. Because I come back here to Farmington, and it was about 71 degrees or something like that.
So we
we have a variety of temperatures and altitudes. But I'll tell you what, that Mesa Verde area sure looks like it'd be prime Bigfoot territory. water in the canyons, just gorgeous, beautiful pinon and juniper woodlands, lots of oak, but because it is a national park and then the reservation surrounding it, the Ute Reservation, we can't go there really, not without permission.
Yeah, well, I got a couple calls on the Bigfoot hotline a week ago or so from a young guy from Arizona. He wanted to remain anonymous. But he sent me an email and he called me and he told me all about it. He just didn't want to get involved in it though, because his parents, when he first told them about it, they gave him kind of a hard time.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, that's the thing. There has been a lot of reports. I mean, people have witnessed a lot of strange activity, but they're really shy about telling their stories. And fortunately, we have people like Brenda that make these people feel comfortable, and then they'll relate the story to her, and then we get more a gist where all this is happening. But still, there's a lot of tight-lipped situations where we might be able to get a little bit out. Actually, you know, there was a kind of a neat story a few years back. JC and I had acted as a kayak shuttle for JC and his friend, and my friend too, Jackie Dunning, a few years back. And Jackie got lost in the river for 2 days. He jumped his canoe, and we didn't know where he was, so I called search and rescue. And there was a long line of search and rescue that were headed toward the lower San Juan River below Shiprock. And we were probably about about 200 yards behind the lead vehicle. And when we got to the lead vehicle, they thought they saw Jackie. There was this dark, Jackie's a black man, but they saw in the hills, just probably another few hundred yards farther, they saw like this black man walking through the hills, and they thought it was Jackie. And there was a Navajo woman in there, and I said, who did it look like? She goes, well, we thought it was Jackie, but we don't know what it was. And then she clammed up, and she would not talk about this any longer. And JC and I concluded that it might have been actually a possible Bigfoot that they saw in the late afternoon. And if we would have been a little closer, we would have seen it too. But we were just driving up to them, and then there was three of them. They were all fire department people from Kirtland, and they were staring at this hillside. And I said, "What are you looking at?" They said, "We just saw somebody walking up on that hill, and he was black covered." And I said, "Well, he's got clothes on. He's got an orange crushed T-shirt and pants, you know." And then they started looking at each other, and then they didn't want to talk anymore. They said, "Well, we don't know who that was or what it was." And then they didn't want to talk, so JC and I later concluded, I think they saw a Bigfoot.
Well, gosh, Dave, I want to thank you for coming on and giving us a lowdown on what's going on in your area there.
Oh, you're welcome.
And
always great.
But I'll keep as always, I'll keep in touch with you.
Okay, yeah.
And see what's going on. And Of course, you can call me anytime, you know that.
Yeah, I and, sure do.
I want to thank you for coming on the show tonight.
Oh, you're very welcome. Always enjoyable to be here.
Okay, well, I'm going to go to a commercial, and we're come back, we're going to have Brenda on.
Okay, great, Marco Bill.
Take care, and thank you.
Hey, you too.
Well, everybody, that was Dave Ortiz from Four Corners, New Mexico. We're going to go to a little commercial here, and we'll be right back.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And we're back, everybody. Well, now we go down to Four Corners and we talk to Brenda. Brenda, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good. Hello.
Oh, I'm doing great, too. Well, Brenda, I heard that you had some things going on in your area. Could you tell us about it?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, we had about a week ago, I just got a phone call last week, or over the weekend, I should say, that this individual was standing by his corral, I believe, somewhere out on the reservation. And he noticed his horse was, you know, just kind of going nuts. And pretty soon looks at his dog, and his dog starts whimpering and crying and runs back towards the house and trying to get into the house. Well, this man couldn't figure out what was going on, so he was standing by the horse, and all of a sudden his horse falls over and faints. And he's like, what the heck is going on? What's causing my animals to do this? You know, he's standing by the corral, his horse is going nuts. All of a sudden his horse faints, and his dog takes off back to the house, and he's standing there alone with his horse in the corral, and the guy starts looking around, and I don't know how close this creature was, but he was pretty close enough to where the horse faded. And the guy looks up, and there he is standing, Bigfoot standing there. Like I said, I'm not too sure how close. He said that he just looked at, they kind of like stared at each other for about a minute, got a good look at him, look at his face, said it was very big, very tall, very muscular, long hair, the hair was black. And he just stood there. It's like they just looked at each other. And this thing stood up. It turned, and it walked off. And the guy just, you know, it really scared this guy. And he went back to the house. And he just stayed in the house for a while. So later on that, you know, kind of like sink in, like why he couldn't believe what he had just seen. Probably a couple of hours goes by, several hours goes by, and he goes to where the Bigfoot was standing and finds his footprint, several prints there that was left in the ground there, and he just couldn't believe what he was seeing. You know, it really scared him. You know, and they're trying to contact me, and of course they didn't have my number and stuff, and they're like, get her out here, you know, we need her to check this. And, you know, I've just been waiting to hear and stuff. And we're supposed to head out there and check out this particular area to find out and see where it's going. They're like, why is it here? One thing I could tell them is looking for food. It's hungry.
Sure.
And due to the fires out here in New Mexico, pretty close to the area that we're in, there's a fire out in Arizona and in New Mexico. I'm pretty sure that's where they're coming in from. Now they're making their way closer to the houses. You know, like Dave Ortiz said, they're looking for food. well, the fires out there in the mountains causing them to move out and head basically our way again. And that's what happened about a week ago.
Wow.
About three weeks ago, my son was up pretty late at night, and if you heard the dogs barking, you know, just kind of going nuts, and notice our husky in the back was just howling and crying like, what, you know, something's back there. But my son just happens to come out of the trailer and walk back to the house. He noticed like a tall figure standing by the tractor. Happened to look, and there's this tall figure standing there right back, you know, by the tractor. He was probably getting ready to come up maybe closer to the dog, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing just stood there. And this thing probably stood between, I believe you said, between 8 and 9 feet tall. Very big.
Wow.
And he ran in the house, came and got me, took off back out there. And, you know, like, just before he came back into the house, this thing was actually watching my son. And at the same time he's watching my son, this thing's walking back towards, you know, heading like he's heading back down towards the river in the back field there. And at the same time he's walking that way, he's watching my son walk back into the house. You know, about that time he gets me, and we go back there and, you know, see if he's still back there. And you know, that thing just took off. You could just hear, like, the stomps as it's walking away or running away. It's pretty loud. So we got the, you know, we had flashlights, and I went to go see if there's, see the footprints. Now, the footprints that we found back there where he was standing by the tractor was not a footprint, you know, how Bigfoot's footprints almost look human. It wasn't that. It's not what we found. What we found was a horse's hooves.
Yeah, that's what I heard, a horseshoe-looking footprint.
Yep, that's the print that we found right there by the tractor.
Wow.
And I thought, wow. I said, okay, you know, this thing took off. He said he could, we could, you know, he could hear it taking off, running back. And it was loud, you know, the stomps, pretty loud.
Yeah.
And
well, you know, that's something really neat. That's something really neat because, you know, we've heard of the three-toed, you know, the three-toed ones, right?
Yes, I've seen those.
And then there's the, you know, the standard old footprint, and then now this one's like a kind of like a horseshoe type. It's something else. That's, man, I'll tell you.
Yeah. And then Tuesday early in the morning, my daughter's getting ready to go to work. She leaves the house around about 3:30, 3:40, something like that. That happened yesterday morning, and she was getting ready, and she heard, heard the dogs really barking and howling and crying. And then all of a sudden, it's just like an instant skunk smell. I mean, just strong. I'm like, okay, he's here. So she calls me on the phone, you know, and we don't have running water in our house yet. So we, you know, walk outside to the little trailer to clean up there. Well, she calls me on the phone, Mom, come out here. I need you to walk me back to the house that he's here. She goes, I can really smell him. He smells bad. You know, I get up and I go outside. Sure enough, you could really smell bad odor, strong odor. So, you know, I get her, kind of flash the light around, and dog's going kind of nuts in the back. Walk her back to the house and, you know, walk her back to the ride. And she takes off to work. Now, after she takes off to work, probably about, I would say about 15 minutes later, it's like that skunk smell. It was gone. Yeah. I mean, it was just, like, just disappeared. She was kind of weird. I was like, wow. I figured he was probably sitting in the cotton tree watching her, because that's what happened a year ago. She was going to work. Yeah, this happened last summer. And this thing has been watching, you know, and I've been warning the people around, you know, watch up in the trees, because they're sitting in the trees watching. They really like to watch the females.
Huh.
Well, little, you know, that I know, I always forget about this cottonwood tree that we have pretty close to our parking lot. Well, one morning, I had Vincent and Leona with me. We've been, you know, going down towards the river really late at night, and this happened about 3 o'clock in the morning. We pulled back up to the house, and we were standing outside talking, And all of a sudden, we heard this, like, something just dropped. I mean, a loud boom. The next thing you see, there he goes. Probably, oh, my gosh, where's the film? The fence, where did we park that far? Probably about 25 yards in front of us. This thing jumps off the tree, and it just runs right in front of us. I mean, it just went boom. Took off running back towards the river. I'm like, oh, my gosh, he was waiting for my daughter to go to work. He was sitting in the tree waiting for her.
Wow.
So from that point on, we've been walking my daughter out to the vehicle because she goes to work at Lisa's house, like I said, 3 o'clock in the morning. And this thing's been sitting there, you know, just waiting for her to come out and watching her as she leaves.
Good gosh. Well, you know, I've seen, we've got a couple of videos where we've seen them, climb the trees and in the trees and shaking the trees and stuff like that. And we can, we can hear the guttural moans and stuff, back and forth, right? And it's really unique. I mean, what's really neat is when you see it climb the tree, it's effortless. effortless. And they're standing straight up, you know. A chimpanzee or a gorilla, when they climb a tree, I mean, they're knuckle walking. Mm-hmm. They really don't walk on two. They knuckle walk most of the time. And then when they climb the tree, you know, it's kind of hunched, you know, like that, right? This thing was just walking upright like a man.
Uh-huh.
And it grabs the tree branch and it just goes, whoop, 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 boom, it's up in the tree. And then it starts shaking the tree. And, and then after it shook the tree a couple of times, when we actually had the photograph or the video, we had it stabilized, and there was actually another one in the tree shaking the tree too, and it went up and shook the tree and then crawled back down and took off. So
I think I've seen those.
But I mean, it's something else. I mean, it's really something else. But, I mean, you have a lot of activity going on.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. it's picking up, so it's here. It's, you know, it's not just down towards the river. On this thing, it's just constantly moving up and down, and people are running. You know, there's so many people going up and down the river that it doesn't really hang down the river. There's different areas on top of the hill where it's running.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people think there's a particular individual, couple of individuals think that there's babies down there being made. No, there's no babies down there at the river. We've walked those islands down there. There's not even a footprint down there.
Right.
So they're making babies. They're not doing them down there, not at the river. It's elsewhere. There's a lot of caves all over the place.
Yeah, I would think those a cave or something like that would be an appropriate place where you're shaded in the summertime or in the wintertime, of course, we're not going to – usually they're going to have the kids in the summertime, usually, huh?
Yeah.
And so they're cool and, you know, they got a nice place to keep the family. Man, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Something else.
Yeah.
Well, gosh, Brenda, thank you so much.
Sure.
I appreciate you coming
on.
I know you're doing so many things. And I appreciate you just taking your time to come on and talking with us. And you and Dave are just the superest people in the world. You're always out there, you know, keeping your hands on the pulse of what's going on. I appreciate that, and thank you so much.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Well, I will hang on and listen to Leroy here shortly, and he'll be doing some stuff, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Take care, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
It's me, Marco.
Okay, Steve, I'm going to mute you out, okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, everyone, that was Brenda from Four Corners. I'd like to, now let's go to Leroy. And if everybody goes up on www.bigfootlive.com and you scroll down the middle column, you'll run into a link, and it's a investigation link, and it's a web page that has all kinds of stuff on it that Leroy has sent me here in the last couple days. And I had to really hurry and put it together so it's not as nice and neat as it should be, but I got it all up there. Leroy, how are you tonight, my friend?
All right. How you doing, Marco?
I'm doing good. Well, how did I do in putting it in order?
You did pretty good, to be honest with you.
There's a lot of stuff to put in there, and that's not even a quarter of the stuff that you have. I mean, it was just... I tell you what. Why don't you take us through, and I got a lot of emails and information things that came in, questions and stuff that came in, and a lot of people were confused, when they think of the Patterson-Gimlin film. Some people thought there's only one, another. Well, how can you have two films? Or I think there's actually four films, right?
Yes.
And you were talking about the tracking dog film and everything. What is that? And so I think a lot of people out there are confused and really don't understand everything. And we've really never given you a good amount of time to be able to go through things and explain things. So what I did tonight was put everything kind of like sort of in an order that you could take it off and from the beginning and kind of go down through it and tell the story of these guys, how they got together, who was making what film when, all that stuff. Would you do that, Leroy?
Yes. The first one I'd like to say is I'm not out to prove that Bigfoot don't exist because I know they do because
no.
If people go to that webpage, you know what I'm saying,
yeah.
They're going to see a drawing that I've done of the encounter of a one I seen in 2002. So I know they're real, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I want people to know that because I've been getting a lot of emails myself and they're saying, why are you trying to prove Bigfoot wrong? I'm not.
This has nothing to do with the existence of Bigfoot. This is only to do with the Patterson-Gimlin film, and there was a hoax that was perpetrated on everyone by some people, and quite a few people, really, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't real. It was fake.
Yeah.
But there are real Bigfoots out there. I believe it. And as you do, you had an encounter, so you do believe it. And
yeah.
There's many other people out there that have had encounters as well. All we're trying to do is expose a hoax that was put on everybody. And you yourself said 2 years ago, I think, when we first met, you said that the Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot didn't look like a Bigfoot that you saw.
I know. You could tell that's a man in a suit. It's not, a real Bigfoot. But, I still did my research on it to find out what's behind the scenes, what all went on, which a lot of researchers didn't take that time out to do. Just like me, I also went ahead and did the test, which you're going to see one of the footprints cast I made from one of the feet I made from the costume and everything else. It actually shows dome ridging in it. You're going to see the mid-torsal break in the foot and everything else that they claim that it cannot be done, but yes, it can be done. And these guys made it happen that way.
Well, why don't you start out from from the beginning on the webpage here. And the first picture I have there is those four different films. Could you explain each of those to us?
Okay. The first film will be the tracking dog film, which was filmed by Rene DeHinden, which was John Green and them went down there with the tracking dog from August 28th through September 3rd of 1967. Jim McLaren was also there with them. And then the second film we're going to that was filmed there at Bluff Creek also was the PG film. Has everybody seen it? And then the third film is Jim McLaren walking the path of the Bigfoot that John Green supposedly filmed in 1968. And then we have the Sasquatch Legend of Bigfoot, which was filmed in 1974 but released in 1977. By A&E and Ron Olson, and Ron Olson was the one who remade the film for Roger Patterson and John Green. John Green helped him on this film because I've contacted John Green myself, and he told me he did work with A&E on this film. But what people didn't know is from that, the Sasquatch Legend Bigfoot was a remade film of Roger Patterson's documentary that he was supposedly filming in 1967.
Okay.
Ron Olson claimed it was him that came with the storyline, but it wasn't Ron Olson. It was Roger Patterson and John Green.
Okay. Now, in the second picture I got in there is Leroy's, your drawing of the Bigfoot you encountered. and has no resemblance of the Patterson-Gimlin creature.
No, it doesn't whatsoever. And now
it's actually more human features than the ape features.
Now, this is something up close. Now, he was only 20 to 25 feet from me.
Right.
Okay, so you can see all the details. You can see he was male and everything else. You can see the his facial hair and his hair on top of his head was more or less like our facial hair and our hair, except from his neck down, you're going to see like more thicker or a first looking color.
Right.
And then the front torso was a lighter color than the rest of it.
Okay. Kind of like a shield or chest shield or something, right?
Something like that, but you know, but you could see he was, you know, nothing on. Put it that way.
I understand. Yeah.
And then,
So then the next picture you got on there is the names of the people who reviewed the film.
Yes, that's the first people who seen the film at Al Diatley's house, which was Al Diatley, Roger Patterson, John Green, Randy DeHinnon, and Jim McLaren.
Now Al Diatley, who is Al Diatley?
That's Roger Patterson's brother-in-law.
He's got Roger the money, Patterson, right?
Sister. Yes.
So he's the money man. Roger Patterson is the. Well, what they had to say about Roger.
Yeah.
He's trying to make a buck any way he can.
Well, see,
and John Green.
It was just Roger Patterson, but it was John Green in on it, right along with Randy Hendon. Okay.
Right.
Because, like I said, when I analyzed the films, okay, I looked at how they was filmed, okay, like when I watch a tracking dog film, it was filmed exactly same way as Roger Patterson's film is. You'll sit there and see the subject, you know, like when he's filming the pilot walking down the dirt road, and then you'll see the camera veer off up to the woods, up to the wood, top of the trees and stuff. Well, we see the same thing happening in the PG film. Okay, so whoever filmed the tracking dog film had to been filming the Patterson film because it was being filmed the same exact way as both films are showing. It's like when if you scroll down, you'll see frames from the PG film and you'll see frames from the tracking dog film. And if you, I'm going to talk about the PG film, okay, you're going to see one picture where it's got says PG film frames, and you've got scene one, scene two, scene three, scene four, scene five, all the way to scene six.
Yeah, I left that. I left all the video or the scenes until the last part, and then what I did is went through all the first parts where all the different things are, different pictures of different things like Ronna Olson, tracks, all the other differences that you've pointed out. The fourth picture that we got on here is a cast of people for the documentary. That's for Roger Patterson's cast for his documentary film.
Yeah, that was Roger Patterson, John Ballard, Jerry Merritt, Howard Hieronymus, Bob Gimlin with the wig on, and then Bob Hieronymus.
Okay.
And that was a documentary film that Roger Patterson was filming in 1967. And then right underneath that, you're going to see a newspaper clipping.
Right.
Okay. Now, this clipping, when I was doing my research and stuff, there were some funny things that when I was reading this, because this article here was done on that Friday night, October 20th, 1967, and posted in the next day's newspaper by Time Standards, of an interview they did with Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin the night they filmed that Bigfoot, supposedly filmed the Bigfoot on October 20th. And when I was reading this, it was like they're talking about a Mrs. Bigfoot and a female Bigfoot and everything else. However, people don't know that in the story they tell, they claim they didn't know it was a female Bigfoot until they showed it on that Monday at British Columbia University. Then they knew it was a female. But here we see all over this, they're pointing out a female Bigfoot, just like Bob Gimlin claimed even in his story today that he was on his horse. Roger Patterson said, "Come," so he rode across the creek bed on his horse and, you know, got his rifle out and stuff. But here, in this article now, we're talking about the very first article where it was talking about Gimlin had to let his horse go.
Right.
To run off with the pack horse. So how can he be on
it? It said Gimlin was astride an older horse, which is generally trail-wise, but it too reared and had to be released, running off to join their pack horse, which had broken during the initial moments of the sighting.
Yes, and that's what I'm saying. So when we read that, it's like, now Roger Patterson don't have his horse because it was gone. They don't have the pack horse, and now they don't have Bob Gimlin's horse. So all these horses are gone, and they got to look for these horses. So now we're
right.
talking longer time there. Okay.
Right.
That's what these are things that I point out. Just like they claimed they was already there at Bluff Creek for like 2 or 3 weeks. Okay. They got there at the end of September or the beginning of October. But also in the same article, they claim they got there on that Saturday before, which puts it at October 14th, 1967, when they got there.
Yeah, and the next news article below that is Mrs. Bigfoot is filmed.
Yes, that's from the same newspaper.
Right.
Okay. That was the front page, and then the top one is the second page when it goes on to tell them the story, what happened.
Right.
And it was 80 to 90 feet away from the Bigfoot. That's their distance. The time they arrived there was October 14th, 1967. Okay, and it tells, and then a story also tells them where they delivered the film. They went to Eureka, California, sent out the film that afternoon. So now they filmed the Bigfoot at 1:30, but they also was in Eureka around noontime, sending the film out. That's why this film couldn't have been filmed on October 20th, because there was too much of a time frame there that they couldn't do all this at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why when I was sitting there, just like people want to know, like, who owns the rights to the film. If we scroll down, you're going to see
right.
where Renee DeHinden and John Green paid Roger Patterson $1,500 for 30-second rights to the film for Canada use. Okay, so they have the rights in Canada. Roger Patterson has rights in the United States.
Right, and there's a newspaper clipping
mm-hmm.
that states that.
And that was on January 12, 1968.
Right.
Now, also in 1968, that's when Ron Olson came into the picture when he met Roger Patterson and John Green. He went ahead and took this film and remade the film for Roger Patterson and stuff.
Okay.
The people don't know. The film that we're studying today and people's researching today was a remade film.
Yeah, and then the picture next to it is... It's called The Second Run of the PG Film, 1968.
Yeah.
And you've listed all the different copies that were made.
Yeah. Just like after Ron Olson remade the film, okay, they still had the original film in their possession plus the master copy after they got done remaking it.
Right.
They made two copies from it. They gave one to Roger Patterson and then one to John Green, which I don't understand how he got a full copy of the film. You see what I'm saying? But anyway,
right.
he did. Now, Renee DeHinden, he got a full copy, plus he got the rights to the frames, individual frames from the PG film. Now, they claim there was only 5 copies of the film, but when I tracked it down, there was actually 15 copies total. But, you know, that's why I said, this is where it gets confusing. So what I did was I started backtracking everything again. After I found this, and I started going back over to Tracking Dog film, and I found a letter that was written to, which we, if we scroll down, we're going to see a letter that was written by John Green on September 7th, 1967. This letter was written to Bob Titmus. Now, everything that this letter talks about, we see in the Tracking Dog film, and we see in images that they took in that Blue Creek Mountain and Bluff Creek in 1968 during that Labor Day weekend. Because it was there from August 28th through September 3rd. Now, remember, the only official report that came from there of Bigfoot tracks being found in 1967 was after Labor Day weekend. But by this letter and by the images and by the film, places John Green, Renee DeHinden, Jim McLaren, Don Abbott, and them there when these tracks were made. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where, but what gets me is, like, when we scroll down from there, which you're going to, like I said, on that, when you see the letter, you'll see marked dates on there and everything else.
Well, there was John Green's letter.
Yeah. Then there's a line that was talking about the 15-inch tracks that Bob Pittman made there that had the ball in the foot. So when you scroll down, you're going to see the actual cast print that Bob Titmus made, and we see the cast in his picture that's next to it. That part of the film they claimed was Roger Patterson making that cast print, but it wasn't. That was Bob Titmus making a cast print, and that film there was added to the PG film in 1968 as well.
Got it.
That's not Roger Patterson's tracks. Okay, so they added that to the film as well. That's why I said now we got two films. Parts of the Tracking Dog film is also in the PG film, as they're claiming, with, like I said, Bob Titmus's cast and stuff. Then when we scroll down from there, we're going to see where Ron Olson owned two companies. He ran the A&E with his father,
right,
because his father owned part of it. He also ran North American Wildlife Research in Eugene, Oregon. Now, that's the one company that he resold Roger Patterson's book through North American Wildlife, which I have a copy of that with their stamp on the back of the book, because mm-hmm. there's two editions of that book. There was a first edition and a second edition. Second edition came out through Ron Olson, and the film remake was by Ron Olson, A&E. That's why when you see next to it, you see two films, which shows Roger Patterson's documentary and frames from that film.
1967.
Then you got the cast from Ron Olson's film from Legend of Sasquatch, Legend of Bigfoot from 1974 that also shows still frames from that film.
Right.
He remade Roger Patterson's documentary in 1974.
With a whole different crew of people, right?
Yeah. Now, I even tracked down even the people that played in that Sasquatch, because just like the guy that played the Indian Tracker, he's actually a jazz musician. He's a drummer for a jazz group.
Mm-hmm.
So, see, I go in depth when I go on my research.
Yeah, and then you have a picture, cast and crew of both films again.
Yeah, and then I got, like, when you scroll down, you have the cast and crew of both films, and then next picture over, you're going to see where it shows the end of the PG film, which calls American Bigfoot. Okay, it's marked SFS, which stands for Science Fiction Subject.
Right.
And you got the register number, and you got the date the film was made was 11/7/1968.
Mm-hmm.
Then you also see a picture of Roger Patterson, that a photo that Ron Olson took, okay, because he's promoting the film now. And then you'll see the book with the stamp mark, which I took a picture of it, and then next to it with the stamp mark of his other company, that was run by
right.
Ron Olson when he did the second edition of the Roger Patterson's book.
So that's the second right city in.
Yeah. And if
the second copyright.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the second edition.
Second edition.
Then when we scroll down, we'll see the promotion where Ron Olson remade the film or promoted the film. Then he promoted Roger Patterson, and he promoted his book in 1968. And then you're going to see a picture of the book with the stamp mark next to it.
Yeah, like you have in the back of it there.
Yeah. Now we know, if we scroll down again, we're going to see a bill of sales that Roger sold the rights to his book in October 27th, 1966.
Right.
So Roger Patterson never owned the rights to the book no more in 1967 or 1968. Next to it, you're going to see tracks where I'm going to show.
Now, who was Glenn A. Coling?
That was one of Roger Patterson's friends that he sold the rights to the book.
Oh, okay.
For $500, that's what he sold some of the book for, $500 the rights to it.
Right.
Now, you go to the next picture, which says Match Tracks.
Right.
Now, here's where it starts getting interesting. Here's where we tie the films together. All right. Now, when I was watching the Ron Olson's film documentary from 1974, okay, we will see these same tracks that we see in the Tracking Dog film and Roger Patterson's film, which you'll see scenes from the Tracking Dog film, which are lined up to the tracks from Ron Olson's film. Okay, they all match. Now, we're talking 7 years apart now when they filmed this. And the same set of tracks that we see in the Tracking Dog film, and we see in Roger Patterson's film is also the same tracks we see in Ron Olson's documentary film from 1974, plus it's a remake of Roger Patterson's documentary film.
Super. We're running short on time again, so what we're going to do... No, no, don't. It's okay. Here's what I'm going to do. Richard, we're going to continue the show. We're going to run it a little late, so we can finish this thing on and talk to you as well. Is that okay?
Fine. I'm right here, Marco.
Okay. That's what we're going to do. We're just going to keep on going. Okay.
Okay.
I'll so then you got the tracks on the film.
Yeah, and then we see the Roger Patterson's cast print that he made supposedly in 1967. That cast, that track is also seen in Ron Olson's film as well, as you can see that's underneath them frames. Now we're going to go to the tracks and shoes. Now everybody was sitting here talking about Ray Wallace making the shoes and the cast, in the tracks at Bluff Creek and Blue Creek Mountain and stuff. So what I did was I did zoomed in on the right foot of the Bigfoot in the PG film.
Right.
And I embossed it, some of the images, because when you emboss an image, it brings out the full details of what the image actually got into it. Well, after I did this, I matched up Ray Wallace's shoes to the Bigfoot in the film. So now we have the feet prints that we see in the tracking dog film had to be made from this Bigfoot here that we see in PG film. Because Ray Wallace's shoes not only match the feet of Roger Patterson's Bigfoot, but they also match the tracks found in the tracking dog film. And when we scroll down to comparison, six right foot.
Right.
I noticed that if you're making fake footprints, okay, and you're making fake shoes, you're going to make the shoes so when no one's around, you know what I'm saying? When no one's around, you're going to make any footprints. However, the shoes that Dale Wallace is holding was the shoes that Roger Patterson used for his Bigfoot. Now, here's why. If we look at the side of the footprint, of the foot shoes that he made, you're going to see nail holes where they attached
right.
the fur from the suit to these shoes. So the shoes that Dale Wallace is holding is the feet of Roger Patterson's Bigfoot.
Pretty neat.
Now, John Green also made, when we scroll down, John Green also made fake shoes, too, as well. And you'll see
right.
a picture where it says John Green shoes. He made them, okay? He made them just like Ray Wallace did. Now we see comparison of seven, no match of Roger Patterson's cast. Well, I took Roger Patterson's cast and tried to match it up to one of the footprints they took from Bluff Creek, and there's no match. There's no comparisons on them whatsoever.
Completely different, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm trying to scroll down as fast as I can. Now we're going to the tracks, test frame footage. Okay, where you see a picture of Dale Wallace with his Ray Wallace's shoes in his hand. We'll see the same cast, these tracks, on the roadside. That was from the Tracking Dog film. And we got another frame from the Tracking Dog film. And then we got one small frame that's from Ron Olson's documentary of 1974. Sasquatch Legend of Bigfoot. They all match the shoes that was whole that Ray Wallace had in his hands. Next to it, we got a test track, which is one of the shoes from my costume that I made, which you can see dome ridging in it, and you can see it. I got a close-up of it. The cast that I made of it from that footprint, and you'll see two images of snow where you can see the dome, the break in the center of the foot that they claimed it cannot be done. But it can. Because the cast shows the same thing. You see the break in the mid-torsal break in the foot, and you also see dome ridging in it.
Okay.
Now, we're going to scroll down. Now, one of the photos, when I analyzed the photo of the footprint they took at Bluff Creek, one thing they always showed was they never showed the full image of the foot. They just show a real close-up of the footprint, and that's it. I got an image of the full foot, the whole frame, the photo, and there's actually a tire mark that comes across the shoe, across the foot.
Yeah.
You can see a tire track, which you can see bends in the grass that's around it and the sticks and the twigs. what they did was they put the shoe down there. That's why you see the compressed ridgings in the heel of the foot, because they put the shoe down there, and then they drove over top of it to make it go down deeper.
Got it. So now we go down to the films and frames.
Now we go down to films and frames. When they get the time, they can check out the 13 frames I took out of the film. That's the ground sequence where you're going to just see the Bigfoot just standing there.
Yeah, the first picture is two Bigfoots. You got three videos. People can look at the videos and see what they got. They got the 13 frames out, the 40-second film, and the 56-second film.
Yeah, what a 40-second
film. And then underneath
film,
that is two Bigfoots, two different Bigfoots.
Yeah. The 40-second film, that's the original film they showed in 1967. And then after Ron Olson remade the film, then the Bigfoot sequence went from 40 seconds to 57 seconds long. And they did use two different Bigfoots. Now, when we
you're showing below that one is
them up.
6 foot two.
Yeah.
And that's the Roger Patterson first part, probably Bob Hieronymus.
Mm-hmm, that's Bob Hieronymus.
And then the second one is 6 foot ten.
Yeah. And that's why anybody has a suit on, okay, now I'm 6 foot two, and if I have the suit on, my suit, I'm 6 foot seven, so that's going to allow me 5 more inches.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Jim McLaren was 6 foot five, so if he had a suit on, he would be 6 foot ten.
Got it.
Okay, next we're going to see the scenes, which I put them in order of how it looks on the PG film. Okay. Now, if we notice, when we're looking at the color changes, we'll see, you know, they show the man, and then they go up to the brush, and, you know, up to the top of the trees. Well, what I did was I noticed that scene three, which shows Roger Patterson with the striped shirt on, and scene five, which shows the first part of the Bigfoot walking, was two different color films than the other rest of the film. So what I did is we scroll down, I put the films in category of the colors that we see in the film, and we find out that when we see the man with the blue shirt on, which is Roger Patterson, which you'll scroll down, eventually we'll show that real quick, that is one film, and then the part that shows Roger Patterson with the striped shirt on and the first walk sequence, that's from a different film that they added back into the film in 1968.
Right. So the film frames two and film frames three, different.
Yeah. Now when we scroll down, you're going to see frames from the tracking dog film, which you also see different colorations in the film, where they use 3 or 4 different types of film.
Right.
And then you're going to see Roger Patterson in the next film. They claim that was Bob Gimlin. No, it wasn't. The profile, if you see Roger Patterson, he's on the same horse as you see in the frames. It has a short tail, white legs, but the horse that shows Roger Patterson, there's mud on his legs. But he has the same riding chaps on, same rifle sticking out on the same side, same blue shirt, same hat, and he's wearing the hat the same way as well. That is not Bob Gimlin, that is Roger Patterson. But they claim it was Bob Gimlin.
Got it.
Now, when we look at the Jim McLaren film, doing Walk Path of Bigfoot, and then from 1968, and we look at Roger Patterson's film, which that's the next two frames you're going to be seeing down there. What it is by my analyzing both films of Jim McLaren walking the path of Bigfoot and Roger Patterson Bigfoot, I found out by the film itself that Jim McLaren walked the path of Bigfoot before Roger Patterson filmed his film. Which you can
I can see the place where the bark is gone.
Yeah, the bark is gone in Roger Patterson's film, but it's hanging there in John Green's film. Just like the branch is gone in Roger Patterson's film, but the branch is there in John Green's film. Just like both films actually shows dog's paw print as well. But there's other things too. I could show trees. These are just one frame each, but I could show trees that's gone in Roger Patterson's film, but they're there in John Green's film from 1968.
Got it.
So Jim McLaren walking the path of Bigfoot was filmed before Roger Patterson filmed his Bigfoot film. Next one, we're going to see the 13 frames I took out of that first video. That's the only frames I took out of it just to show that the Bigfoot is just standing there.
Right.
Now, if that Bigfoot's standing there for them 9 frames before he starts walking again, That means that Bigfoot was standing for not only the 9 frames, but you got 13 frames here if he was standing. So now we're looking at 22 frames of Bigfoot just standing in one spot. And so Roger got relocated. Now, they always talked about this Bigfoot's arms was too long. Okay, it was down by its knees or close to its knees. No, right. When you study the film, you can see his hands are just as normal as ours, just right below the buttocks.
Right.
So I'll point that out as well. Now, when we look at, like I said, there was an image that I found that they took out. They claimed it was the S tree. Okay, it's not the S tree. If you'll see John Green, I took an image from him, from one frame from the tracking dog film, and lined it up to that blurred image that they took out of the film.
Right.
It matches, John Green to a perfect. Now, right below that, you're going to see where it says S tree image. They claim, well, no, that was S tree. That's what made it blurred out. No, because you can see that where I line that up, and there's no match whatsoever.
Right.
Now, you see, like, okay, now we got the Bigfoot stop twice. I'm showing frames from the film where you can see actually Bigfoot just standing there with his arms down to his side two times, and then it changed direction. Also show images where the Bigfoot standing upright, just standing there, and also walking upright with no limp over.
And this is just some, this is not all, but this is a good portion
we're talking,
of the stuff.
This is just a little bit from 7 years of research, so you can imagine how much more I got. I mean,
oh, yeah.
I got a whole case full of files on this alone.
Well, you know, Leroy, I want to thank you so much for coming on and taking us through all this. I got a lot of questions on it before, and I couldn't answer everything. But I'm glad you went through it, and we got something now that shows pretty much a lot of the stuff that was in question. Thank you so much for coming on with us. I got to hurry and go up to our good friend Richard.
Okay, Mark.
You take care, and thanks for coming on, Leroy.
All right, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Leroy, and we're going to go to Richard. Richard, how are you, my friend?
Hi, Marco. I'm fine. And you?
I'm doing good. Well, what did you think?
I was a believer of the Patterson film until I started going out myself, and that was about a year and a half ago. And now I know it's fake because they're not going to do a model walk and look back at you. They're going to just keep. They're not going to be surprised like that.
Have you looked at some of the stuff that we put up there?
Yes, I have. Marco, I got a question to ask you.
Yes.
Brenda piqued my interest, and I'll make this quick.
Sure.
About a month ago, my daughter said, now my daughter lives not in a rural area, but a suburban rural area. And I've always, there's woods on both sides of her.
Yeah.
And I thought there was always something there. She tells me she had footprints on her lawn, and I said, you know. And she says, no, they're not human footprints. They look like cow footprints.
Huh.
She goes, there must have been elk here or something. There's no elk around. And now Brenda's saying that she had footprints that look like a cow. Is that true?
No, not a cow. A horse, kind of a horse, a hooved.
Was a hoof.
A cow is a split hoof.
No, this was not a split hoof. It was.
What Brenda was talking about was a horse hoof.
This was not a split like a deer hoof. A cow would look kind of like a big deer hoof, wider and. No, this didn't look like this. Look now that you think I think about it, it's more like a horse hoof.
Yeah.
There was no split. That's the first I've ever heard of that.
Well, me too. I mean, when Brenda brought that up last week, when I was talking to Dave, he mentioned that, and I said, "Wow, that's something." But you know what? There's a lot of different things we don't know about this.
Yeah, the three-toed one.
Yeah.
I got a couple of those, and I put it on Facebook, and the guy says, "Were you taking pictures of pterodactyl footprints?" I think that's just where the foot compresses. You know what I mean? It was in really slick mud. I think
No, Richard. There are actual casts three-toed.
Well, I had them, but These are the same places where I had the five toes. Would they be together?
Well, I mean, they can be. That's where these are, too. I mean, the people that have had them, they found them with the, I mean, they're not separate.
No, I might have
So, I mean, it's amazing. I don't know.
He said, you're thinking, what do you got, pterodactyls there?
I don't know. I'll tell you, it's amazing.
And
there's so much we don't know.
And I walked a new route. I walked 5 miles the other day in my preserve where I walk.
Yeah.
And I paralleled the landfill for about, I'd say, half a mile, and the fence was knocked down. So, you know, it could very well be that they're going into the landfill and eating, too.
Wow.
I didn't see any prints. But where I walked was a new trail in there, and mm-hmm. it was as pristine and as thick as any place in the Adirondacks. And I can't swear to it, but I thought I was being I heard snapping of twigs, and it seemed like it was parallel me. I can't be sure of it. I couldn't prove it. I'm not even sure myself. I just had a feeling that it was happening.
Now, you're going to send me some pictures tomorrow or next day, right?
Well, unfortunately, I cleaned my computer, and I think I erased them all. Still looking.
That's all right.
But this preserve is about 5,000 acres, and it's a pine barren. But there are parts of it that are just as forested as heavy any place you could ever believe. And you could hide an army in there.
Wow. So you're keeping pretty active over there.
I go out every day, but I'm not really seeing anything.
Well, yeah, but
some footprints.
You did before. I mean, you sent some pictures.
Yeah, the foliage is just too thick, Marco.
It
could be 3 feet away from me, and I wouldn't know it. They didn't
move. You need to get one of those doggone game cams.
No, what I need is a thermal cam, but I can't afford it.
No, the game cams, Richard, the game cams, they have the thermal night cam, stuff like that on it.
Yeah, but it's a preserve, though. I don't know if I could put it in there.
Oh, I don't know, yeah.
They have, Marco, I was sitting in the parking lot 2 weeks ago. They have their own game cams in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they really do. And I said something to the woman there one day, and she gave me like a look. They have their own game cams. And they do have trout where I had the most activity, where I had my first sighting, the one that looked like the chimp running across the trail.
Yeah.
That's been closed off for over a year, right after I put it online.
Wow.
That trail is closed off on both ends.
Well, you're going to keep in contact with me, right?
Oh, yeah, when your friend, Tom's friend Andrew, came down with me, we actually skirted that trail. It's closed off on both ends where I had the most activity.
Jeez.
It's almost like somebody's protecting something. I don't know. Maybe it's just in my head, a conspiracy, but.
You never know.
Why would it be closed off? And that's where I heard what I call Chinese speak or Japanese speak, like it was two individuals. That's the only sounds I've ever heard in there. No howling, no. It was like, and someone answered it in a different, little bit different, like that, back and forth. And I was walking out, and I said, okay, guys, I'm leaving, just like that. But it didn't sound like it was coming from very big. They were very big, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't booming, but they were conversing back and forth, and there was nobody else there, and why would they use gibberish back and forth? And it's just
who knows?
It sounded
I don't know.
Just like, and it sounded just like I've heard on the internet. You know, they have it in, you know, Bigfoot sounds. I heard it after I heard it there on the internet.
Pretty neat. Well, we got to go now, Richard.
One other thing, quick. I bet you never had anybody in Armenia ask about Bigfoot. I did when I was over there. They call them Almas or something like that.
Yeah, Russian
Almas.
And
I asked. But nobody said anything to me. I'm going back next year, and I'm going to really look into it in the Caucasus.
Well, you ought to take a look at the articles and stuff they're written in Russia on Zaina.
This is in the Caucasus Mountains. They're called Almas or Almas.
Well, I know what they're called. Yeah, they're called Almas. In Russia and Armenia and all that places, they're called Almas.
Yeah. Well, next year when I go back,
I need to send you the link on Zaina.
Would you please?
Yeah. She had five or six kids.
And sometime if we could off the phone, I'd like to talk to you about those horse hoofs.
Okay,
more on it.
I'm going to need to talk to Brenda some more about it.
Okay,
get
thank
some more
you, Marco.
Information. Good night now, Richard. Thank you.
Good night, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with us tonight. And we'll be with you next week with Tom. Keep Bigfooting and keep on doing what you're doing, my friends. Good night now. See you next week.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pact that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they die. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legends, tales, and facts.